welcome to the latest episode of the Customer Experience Superheroes podcast series. In this series, I'm Christopher Brooks, I'm your host, as well as being the MD for Lexton CX. We share with you the ideas, the inspiration, and the insights from the many individuals that cover the gambit of dynamism, which is the world of customer experience. In this episode, we will introduce you to Devashish, who, as the lead at Communicate, is really pioneering some of the areas of AI in customer service. He'll share with us some of the technological developments and the improvements he's making that are helping those companies in the world of customer experience. We'll also talk about some of the considerations, concerns, and better practices that need to be employed if you're embarking upon engaging with AI to improve the efficiency and the effectiveness of your customer service operations. And we pause to reflect on what the future for AI may well bring. So, without further ado, let's go over and carry on the conversation with Devashish.
So I'm here today with Devashish. Hi, Devashish. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing good, Christopher.
Excellent. Well, we're really excited. I mean, obviously, AI is a topic on everyone's lips, but you know, you guys at Communicate are looking at it in quite an extraordinary way. So I want to really understand a few key areas I think we're going to get into. I know something you're very passionate about is the responsible use of AI, but also some of the innovations you guys are getting up to is quite incredible. So I look forward to talking about those with you. But before we do, I think it's always helpful for our listening audience to get some appreciation of where you've come on your journey, how you've arrived where you are now, and perhaps where you started. You know, where was the flame ignited for customer experience? So if you could give us your plotted path, we really appreciate it.
Yeah, sure, Christopher. So my name is Devashish. So I am a computer science graduate. So I'm a techie. So I have worked with a couple of startups in the past. And then, you know, I also, you know, always wanted to build something of my own. So we, built a texting app, back in 2011. It was you can text from your computer screen. You can use your Chrome and then send a SMS. So that's how the journey started, where I was doing something around the communication tools. And then in 2015, I started a company, Applogic, which was a chat API-based company. And that time, everyone was integrating chat into their products. So that's how I got into the chat space, where we were enabling businesses to embed chat product within their application, like buyer-seller chat, teacher-student chat, and a lot of other use cases. So while doing that, I realized that the major use case of chat is actually happening on the customer service space. And that's how I got to the customer experience state, where there is a user interaction happening, which is ultimately leading to the improvement of the customer experience, right? Because ultimately the customer service angle comes from there. So that's how I got into the customer experience space. And by building Applogic, I have worked myself as a support agent for a long time, because we were a small team and Applogic was more of a developer product. So I had to get into the customer support and answer the customer queries daily. So that's when I realigned a lot of frustration as well of answering the same questions again and again. And, you know, at the same time, be helpful to our customers. So that's how, after Applogic got acquired, then I went and started another company with my co-founder, others, Communicate. And there, the goal was to enable the customer experience and bring the AI chatbot into company's product, so that they can have the automation in place, so that the support agent's workload is reduced. The end users are happy because they're getting instant help. And that's how overall the customer experience is improving. So that's how I got into this space.
Excellent. And just give us a flavor in terms of the clientele you have that are finding this as an opportunity they're exploring. So which sort of clients do you have?
So we have clients in different industries and different geographies, majorly in the America region. And we cater to healthcare companies, e-commerce companies, education, universities are there, fintech companies. So some of the clients are like Amgen, which is a biotech company in the US. Then we have insurance companies like LGBT Life from India. So these companies, majorly where there's a high volume, So those are our ideal customers. Because where there's a high volume, that is the place where they want automation to come into picture so that their team workload is less and their customers are able to get instant help.
Okay, so that's interesting. So actually, it's that high volume that's kind of the common denominator. Geography and industry parallels are not so important, I guess.
For us, the US geography is working really good because I think there's a lot more acceptance in terms of trying out the new technology like AI. So that's what we are seeing, although other geographies like India are also getting into that. We have many customers from India as well, but the adoption rate we are seeing very high in US as compared to other geography.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So, and you know, how many of you are there now? I mean, it's started as, you know, you're a co-founder, where you say, yeah. You know, you're answering the phones and making the lunches and, you know, everything else. What sort of size is it needed now to run the operation?
So right now we are, you know, 30 people team. We are like two co-founders, and then the majority of the team is on the tech side, building the product, creating AI models and all. Is that, what the question was?
Yeah, absolutely. And how did, I mean, obviously when it's the two of you, you're just answerable to each other. You've now got a large team that you're responsible for. Have you embraced that change as well?
There's a, set of responsibilities that we have to pass on to the team as well. Because initially when we were only a small team, there were a lot of things we were doing. And now we have a set up a customer support team that takes care of the customer queries. Of course, we also get involved there as and when required. But then there's a lot of work delegation, you can say, roles and responsibility delegation that we had to do when the team, scaled.
Yeah, which is, I mean, it's something very interesting. I always think for entrepreneurs when they start to scale up and, they've got to not dull their entrepreneurship, but they've got to embrace their managerial responsibilities as well. I guess it's something that perhaps you never think about when you're starting up that, I will have to become a manager at some point. I need to develop people and develop capabilities and give them the opportunity to shine as well.
Yeah, right, definitely. And then, there's a lot of responsibilities and ownership now which is passed onto the team. And they take care of interacting with the customer, solving a lot of problems. And in some cases, we also get involved. So there's like a lot of learnings we had on, how to do that transition.
Yeah.
Because it's really important to take care of, the customer requirement, customer needs. As well as there are like a lot of guidelines as well, especially around AI. There are like a lot of guidelines that we have to write down, create SOPs, and then hand it over to the team.
Excellent. So we'll come on to those guidelines in a little bit. But I guess what's very interesting is obviously you're in the business of helping to improve outcomes for customers, make the engagement between the customer and the organization more effective. And you're using a technology to do that, but your value must be judged on how good the experiences these clients have with you. If you don't deliver a good experience, how can they trust that your solution will deliver a good experience? So do you have to work on that? Do you have to be conscious of the fact that the experience you provide to clients is an important indicator of how good you are at customer experience?
Yes, definitely. So everything, in the product goes back to the customer experience because it's not only about how fast the bot can answer to the user, it's also about whether the answer was really good and the end user is happy, right? It's not only about the speed, but it's also about the accuracy and the way the answer is given. So there are like a lot of factors there. So we actively track the CSAT, the end users give the CSAT after their chat conversation. And that is an indicator for our customers as well on whether their CSAT is improving with time or not. Like we have some customers where the CSAT improved by 40% after they enabled the AI-based, platform into their customer service. So that's the indicator for us.
Yeah, very, very impressive. So you mentioned about guidelines then. So the first area I'd like to get to, we are very conscious when we're talking to clients and to organizations that there is a hunger and an appetite to consume AI and deploy it at real speed, you know, kind of start, you know, using our half-built learning platforms and let's start optimizing AI and let's start gaining some efficiency. And I was reading, as I mentioned to you just this morning, about some law cases coming forward where, you know, the data sets haven't actually, there's no authority to use the data sets and it's kind of privileged information. How do you go about that in the first instance? Because I'd imagine you must have clients who are very eager, very keen to optimize the benefits of it. But you mentioned yourself kind of guidelines, the governance, the responsibility. What is your take on it, and how can organizations be more responsible when they're thinking about AI?
Yeah, right. So, you know, when you're implementing AI, the main thing in AI is what is the data that you're using to train it, right? If the data is very less or if the data is biased, you know, no amount of training is going to help, right? So whenever we are, you know, working with the customer, the first thing that we check is, you know, whether that data that they are training it, whether it belongs to them or not, because that's the first criteria, right? And then whether the data is sufficient for the training purpose or not, right? If the data is not, you know, sufficient, then there are other ways to go about it using, you know, some other form of bot creation. So, you know, that's what we go through the customer, understand the type of data they have, then we manually review the data as well to some extent so that we can identify whether there are biases in the data or not. So to give you an example, let's say there's a data of, you know, certain diseases in you know, different countries.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, let's say for one country, the data is very small. And for another country, the data is huge, right? So, and if a user from the country where the data is very small comes and asks a question, it might not be that good as compared to where there's a huge set of data, right? So that's the data, you know, discrepancy, because there has to be a minimum threshold, minimum set of data for each type of segment. So those things we then inform the customers on what are the gaps in their data, and then we ask them to collect those set of data before it gets to the training feed. So these are some of the things that we take care of, and then we also take care of the personalization, because many times what happens is a user asking a question, the answer might be different than the answer which is for some other user. To give you an example, we are working with a very big company in India, where they are also using it for their HR portal. Now, if a user asks a question about, let's say, reimbursement limits of different employees, now different employees are working on different designations, so each one has a different limit. Now, if a user is asking a question about what is my reimbursement limit, right, for certain benefits, different employees will have different answers. Now, if the bot is not aware of the user, then the bot answer will not be correct, right? So the AI system needs to be aware of who that user is they are talking with and all their attributes, which are finally linked with the training data that is provided. So these are some of the things that we, you know, take care while working with our customers.
Talking to somebody the other day and saying that sometimes it gets oversimplified, you know, there's a sense of we've got data, we've got thing called AI, and that will then mm-hmm. you know, and it may sound very good at kind of a board level, but when you get into that, you're actually there's a lot to do with, you know, kind of the data selection, the quality of it, that period of kind of engineering to make sure it's cleaned and it's in good shape. Then the modeling that has to take place before you then start operating it. Where do you see in that process as the areas that perhaps are undervalued and the areas where you can really fall short in terms of the capability of what you're going to get from your AI?
Yeah, so in terms of, you know, like undervalued in terms of that, like many times, you know, people don't pay much attention to gathering that much of data because gathering the data is a time-consuming process.
Yeah, yeah.
And then people have to, you know, get the data maybe from different department, different sources and all. So I think that's where, you know, one place where people undervalue it. And nowadays, after looking at ChatGPT, the expectations are very high. And many times, you know, people think that, okay, ChatGPT is able to answer everything. Why do we have to provide that data? Right. So I think that aspect, you know, gets undervalued a lot. Yeah, in terms of, you know, thing that companies can get most, you know, like there are different areas, you know, beyond simple interaction. So companies can get done a lot. Other than simple question answer thing, they can get certain work done by the, and if they are able to find their internal services, right? So they can achieve, like, one is where you are using AI to get the information. Another is you are using AI to do certain action. So I think that part is right now, you know, where there's some work happening, and, you know, in the coming years, there will be a lot more things happening. You will see a lot of co-pilot, you know, where you can hire a sales agent, hire a customer support agent. So I think that part is, you know, yet to be seen. It's an ongoing thing. You know, a lot of companies are working on it. But the true value will come when actions will happen and not just information retrieval.
Sure. I mean, for me, there is, and I think it's probably the same in a lot of area businesses, but I'm quite a bit older than you, Devashish. So I remember kind of the original arrival of websites, and when they came out, there was an explosion, and it was almost like people were building these really tall towers, but hadn't really thought about the foundations, and then it was too late, so they just crumbled. But then they fell. The next time they realized we need strong foundations, and they stuck. And I wonder what's your observation. Do you think AI is on a bit of a roller coaster, or are we going to see it fail before it picks itself up and succeeds?
I don't think AI is going to fail. Every year you can see it's going to a next level. And now we can see that AI is able to do voice conversation as well, and very seamless, very fast, very, you know, real. So I don't think it's going to fail. But yeah, there is one thing that is very much required, and I'm sure it's going to happen the coming years, is right now the AI is relying more on large language models, where you need a huge set of data. And so I'm sure something will come in future where we would probably not require that huge set of data for training or creating the LLM models and all. This is like a huge requirement, right? You need so many GPUs. Right, you need that. First, you need that much data, then you need that many machines to build your own model, right? So I think it's a high time the industry will definitely work on, so that we can have a small language models, but in terms of effectiveness of the same level, maybe it might come for specific use cases, specific domain areas, but I think that will happen.
Okay, that makes perfect sense. So it'll become much easier to work with a smaller or more specific data set. One of the things that I'm conscious, in the UK, we're going through a general election at the moment. And I know similar things have happened in France not too long ago, Argentina, South Africa. One of the things that doesn't seem to be on the political agenda is the governance around AI. And I just wondered what your view is. Is it something that, as a society, we're still trying to figure out, do you think?
Yeah, it is very much required. And I know some of the countries have already started planning on this. Because if the AI is not taken into consideration, all the regulations and the compliances, then it can go out of hand, right? A good person will think from all the positive use cases perspective, but we don't know what all things can happen with AI. And then there are cases where there's a data privacy concerns we are already seeing, because if the AI is getting trained on some data, which is copyright data, that's again a problem. And if the data is biased, That's again a problem, especially in healthcare. If the AI gives a wrong suggestion to a patient, it could be life threatening, right? Mm-hmm. So there is definitely governance required on that. The proper compliances framework needs to be placed, and it's a good thing we can see that some companies like Google, Microsoft, they have created certain set of responsible AI guidelines, and that's a very good initiative from these companies. And I think all the big giants will have to work closely with the government and get the guidelines and everything in place so that there is not any negative impact of this.
Yeah, I've seen in other sectors things like, I think it was in Portugal, they adopted Visa's governance for automatic payments because it didn't have anything. And I wonder if governments will use some of the superpowers in this space as kind of their starting point. And it's encouraging to hear, as you say, that people are thinking about it, considering it and developing it as they go forward. I mean, obviously, so we've spoken about the responsibility. We've spoken about kind of the practical nature of it. One thing you've constantly given us during this podcast is an appreciation of the importance of expertise. And when I say expertise, it's kind of broad expertise. And I say this with, we can be honest about this. I think in some organizations, there is such an excitement around this topic that you almost, you wrap four walls around it and say, we're going to build our own and we're going to just do it ourselves. Obviously, that means that you keep all the intelligence inside and you kind of don't show the world what you're doing as you go. But from my perspective, it feels like there's an inherent danger in that. It feels like this is something we should share and develop together. I don't see it necessarily being a differentiator, significant differentiator. I think it gives you an advantage, obviously. But it feels to me that organizations would benefit from being in partnership with organizations like Communicate so that you can bring your world knowledge as you're working with different partners and different clients into every single project, rather than, working within a company, putting your head down and saying, this is where we're going. And regardless of how things change, it's too late because, our train's left the station. I mean, it's easy for you to say because you do sit on the outside, but is there ever an argument to say, let's just keep it in-house? Or do you think there's always a value of having some external partner to help, keep how rapidly this thing's moving, keep an appreciation of what's going on out there and bringing best practice in?
Yeah, so I think, keeping in-house is only when there is a very confidential work going on or, very long, research work. Otherwise, I think it's best for customers to partner with, someone, be it Communicate or, any other player in the market, to partner up. Because the people who are working on it every day, right, they get a lot of feedback from all the different, customers. And there's there are various problems there, right? Because some customer gives one feedback, another will give some other feedback. So the companies who are working in this space, they consolidate all that feedback and do that improvement, right? As compared to, one company who is keeping everything private and then, doing the limited, set of, improvement. And because it requires dedicated time. And if some company has whole bandwidth available, great. But what I've seen majorly is, most of the companies, they try to focus on their core business, rather than reinventing what the rest of the world is doing. So that's what I've seen. Some places where I've seen customers requesting us about the data, where the customer had a concern around the data and they did not want the data to go out of their country, right? For example, we work with NFC Life. So it's an insurance company in India. Because it's insurance data, so they don't want the data to go out. Yeah. Right? Uh-huh. So for those kind of, cases, we actually do a deployments in different regions. So their concern about data is taken care by deploying servers in India, right? So similarly, we have worked with some European companies where the there's, you know, AI models are deployed in universe. So those kind of, you know, concerns as well comes for the data. But otherwise, ideally, my recommendation would be to work with companies who are working in the customer experience AI space and partner with them and move things fast, because AI space is moving really, really fast.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I think that's salient advice. I think it makes perfect sense. We find, you know, the work that we do as consultants, advising and supporting clients on their kind of customer experience, strategic work and the development of customer experience management solutions. We find you can go down a rabbit hole and, you know, become a little island if you say, no, and just give us time just to develop some understanding and capability of this. And it feels as if that will be so much richer if there was an external partner who's able to kind of coach you and support you and develop your capability, so that you don't create something only to find out it's now obsolete, you know, and it's been removed. But I think, I mean, it's easy. You know, you could call it kind of a pitch for Communicate, but it's not. It's actually a plea to organizations to say, as we have found with other areas of rapid development, find partners you can trust and rely on who are going to, you know, learn with you, as opposed to learning on your own and then finding the leadership team say, this doesn't work, this is too expensive, I can't see the return coming through. Thank you for that honesty in that space. I really appreciate that. I mean, this is an impossible question I'm going to ask, but so I'm going to put a timestamp on it. You know, we're in July 2024, but what comes next for AI? Because I realize, you know, this will probably go out within a month and we may be very out of date. By the time we get there, like, you know, realistically, if you think about the short term, what are the next steps that, you know, AI is going to go through? Are we going to see it just being focused in this area of customer service? Or I was at the privilege of being in Monaco a couple of weeks ago and was hearing how it's being used by some, you know, military forces to kind of, you know, level up, you know their abilities. So where do you see it going?
Yeah, so one thing is, AI is going to go from just the information retrieval to doing certain actions. And we will see a lot of co-pilots in the market, where the co-pilots will actually perform certain tasks.
Okay.
Right? Be it writing an email, be it downloading something, be it finding prospects or anything, you know, whatever. It's like replacing the jobs that human beings were doing, and the AI will do that job as opposed to just finding the information. So that is definitely going to happen. And I think a lot of things going to get into voice and video, as you know, we can see in the latest, you know, OpenAI's launch as well. You know, a lot of interest is coming on the voice. And yeah, and you know, one of the things that we, you know, discussed earlier is a model that can work even with the next set of data, but have, you know, greater accuracy. So these are the three things that I and that I'm sure the
great
market will go towards.
Really interesting. Thank you for that. I mean, we've looked at AI probably from the company's perspective, but let's just dwell on the point you just made earlier around employees. And you yourself have recognized this firsthand.
Yeah.
You know, those repetitive tasks being taken away.
Yeah.
What do you foresee employees are going to be able to do with that release of resource? I mean, there is potentially a regrettable kind of, you know, cost saving that could happen. But those who are perhaps thinking more strategically, how do you think organizations will be able to utilize this time from their employees that they get back?
Yeah. So if we are talking about, let's say, in terms of customer service, you know, the market that we have, so what we are, you know, looking at is the support agents are going to get free with the repetitive and boring work. It's not going to 100% eliminated, but 90 to 95% is what the workload will be opted, sold, right? And then these support agents will be relatively free to do the more complex or more customer personalized relationship work. So they are going to move, you can say, from a traditional customer support answering system to a more personalized customer relationship thing, right? So yeah, it's less about the cost saving, but it's more about now they have a workforce that can build better customer relations, more personalized customer relations, and grow the company further, generate more revenue. It's more of a revenue enabler as compared to,
Excellent. And then the other perspective from the customer's perspective, you know, I've seen interesting presentations on the level of adoption from kind of digital native versus people like me who are digital immigrants. But obviously it's going to get more sophisticated. And what I did see was a really interesting piece that humans will lie to AI more likely than it will to humans. And, you know, we will become, as we always do, become trained in kind of spotting when we're talking to an AI versus talking to a human, if indeed it's us or if it's not our own AI doing it. But from a customer's perspective, you know, what are the perceived benefits that the customer is going to be able to really value the AI being deployed effectively?
Yeah, one is the time to response. So if there's AI deployed, there's no waiting time. The customer can get quick answers, and many times even faster. Even nowadays we are seeing even the complex queries get answered faster. So that is definitely one. And at the end, the customer is in terms of customer service or customer experience, the customer is basically looking to get an answer, right? It doesn't matter whether the answer comes from an AI bot or a human being. So that's the biggest benefit. Plus, it's available 24/7 because many businesses, they have team working in the day shift. So at nighttime, if you need help, there is no one there. And then you have to fall back to the email ticketing system, right? So that is a great help for the end users that they don't have to wait for the next day. Right, they can get instant answers 24/7, and they can get it on the tap of few buttons on their mobile. Yeah. So,
and obviously, I mean, what we've seen over the years is it gets harder and harder with digitalization for brands to get their identity to come through. So, if I'm dealing with interacting with Ferrari AI or Disney AI or Walmart AI. Are organizations starting to kind of consider the brand language in their large language models? Are they bringing the narrative and the tonality that they will use that others won't, and decisions that they will make as that brand and that perhaps others wouldn't? How are they fusing this in to make sure that the customer still receives that kind of what feels like a branded experience?
Right. So, with tools like OpenAI and all, there is a way you can set the tone. You can configure whether you want to. You can set some prompts. You can say, okay, reply in a professional tone, reply in a friendly tone. So that options are there. And I think brands will soon, utilize them. Some companies are already using them. So prompt engineering is going to play a good role where you have to write really good prompt to, answer it in a way your brand will do. So that is, so that is going to happen.
Excellent. I'm really interested in that space because, we work across many different verticals and with different types of audience. And you've got obviously, in most countries now and in most verticals, that vulnerable customer who, needs to be dealt with in a specific way so they fully comprehend the information. So it'd be really interesting to see that go. Yeah. Well, Devashish, I've really enjoyed this conversation. I think you've demonstrated, you are the man to go to if you want to kind of consider, what do we do next with our AI? If people want to get hold of you at Communicate, what is the best way to do it?
So I'm available at devashish@communicate.io. And also, we can reach out to me. If you click on the chat option on the Communicate side, you can just say, I want to talk with Devashish, and the bot will hand it over to me.
Of course. Excellent. Wonderful. Well, we include that for those of our listeners who want to have a chat with you. I guess you're always open to questions that could be posed, and you must be mindful of information on what not to do as well as what to do. So we'll include your details in the description and they can reach out to you. Well, I personally, this is the second time we've interacted with your organization. And it's very exciting to see where you're going. But I really respect the fact that you're doing it in a responsible way, which is most admirable. So I wish you and the rest of the organization a very kind of healthy and progressive growth. I'm sure the next time we talk, there'll be 200 of you. And you'll be sharing with us again, kind of, you know, where AI goes next. But for now, thank you so much for your time and for sharing your knowledge and being so open with your answers. And really look forward to seeing where this space goes next.
Yeah, thank you, Christopher, for having me here. And it was great interacting with you.
Yeah, brilliant. Thanks ever so much. Take care.